Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. This is the podcast for Monday, December 7th. President Obama announced his new plan for Afghanistan last week. He'll deploy an additional 30,000 U.S. troops on the ground there, and he said U.S. forces will begin withdrawing from Afghanistan in 18 months.
He didn't mention women once.
That's Rachel Reed. She's a researcher for Human Rights Watch and the author of a new report about the state of women's rights in Afghanistan.
Rachel, yeah, tell us a little more about President Obama's announcement and what he did talk about. We know that he asked for more troops, but what did he leave out?
Well, I mean, I think that the protection of women and women's rights should really be one of the benchmarks through which the U.S. engagement in Afghanistan is judged. Because women's security is severely impacted, more than anyone else's, when there are deteriorations in the general security climate. So while President Obama talked about the need to put civilian protection at the centerpiece, he didn't mention women and women's rights, which was a great disappointment. And I can see with us here, we've got Mari Akrami as well, who's an amazing women's rights activist, nodding away there. I know she was very disappointed by that as well.
Yeah, we have Mari Akrami here with us today in the Human Rights Watch offices, and she is part of a group of women who started the first system of women's shelters in Afghanistan.
The thing is that what we now call it, which is achievement for women, it was our own commitment. For example, myself, I just started with, as a volunteer basis, my work for more than 3 or 4 years. Then later on, it was again my commitment to how to support a vulnerable woman, how to support the women that they are under violence, and how to show them the way that how they should approach their rights. It was my commitment. Yes, definitely, there was some support from international community, financial support a little, as I had access to that money to run the shelter. But still, the expectation of women of Afghanistan is still we are not satisfied with that.
You're talking about how individual women, and I think really a movement of individual women that you work with, have made the changes. The government of Afghanistan, have they done anything as well? And maybe Rachel can talk a little bit about this.
There have been some achievements by the government. I can't pretend there have been none. The Ministry of Women's Affairs worked with civil society groups and activists like Mari to bring forward this year something called the Elimination of Violence Against Women law, which is a significant achievement. I think, you know, the law is not perfect, but it makes rape a crime for the first time in Afghanistan, which is a really huge achievement for the women who pushed that forward. But I think from the government, we see a mixed picture. I mean, as the insurgency has grown stronger and stronger, President Karzai has grown weaker and he's become more dependent on conservative fundamentalist factions, former warlords, the kind of people who often their views are not so different from the Taliban, actually. You know, there are plenty of powerful people in parliament who think a lot like the Taliban. Earlier in this year, something called the Shia Personal Status Law was passed by the president and by parliament. And this was very reminiscent of the Taliban era. It had all sorts of restrictions on women's life, such as not being able to leave the house without permission from their fathers or husbands, granting custody rights to fathers and grandfathers and not to women. I mean, all sorts of articles that were awful and horrified a lot of women in Afghanistan. And that was done basically because President Karzai wanted to appease certain fundamentalist groups in the run-up to the election. So those are the kinds of obstacles that women like Mari are battling against. It's not just that they're there trying to shift very conservative attitudes towards women with society. They're also sometimes fighting against a government that actually isn't doing its duty to protect their rights. I'll give you one really clear case of this. In the summer of 2008, President Karzai freed two gang rapists from jail, basically to win political support from the family that they came from. And this was sent an appalling signal to the country about how seriously President Karzai takes women's rights. You know, he was overturning a judicial sentencing of gang rapists in order to curry favour politically, without regard for what that says to the victim of that horrendous attack and to the rest of the women in the country.
What you've said in your new report about women in Afghanistan is that I noticed some quotes from women activists there saying they feel betrayed because the government has basically chosen to affiliate themselves and perhaps take money from warlords who, you know, are, as you said, not much better than the Taliban or perhaps have Taliban affiliations now. And yet what we're seeing, and one of the things you talk about, is assassinations of high-profile women in public life.
the protection of women's rights is completely dependent on the courage and bravery of women like Maria Crummy, who dare to stand up and speak out for women's rights, where in a culture where that's still, you know, that's a challenge to the establishment and it's not liked, and when you speak up for women's rights in Afghanistan, you are quite likely to get threats or come under pressure from the government and from some of these conservative factions. And we've seen, sadly, some incredibly brave and impressive women assassinated. A woman called Sitara Achakzai was murdered in the spring of this year. Very impressive, you know, human rights defender, peace campaigner, local councillor. Last year, Malalai Kakar, the most senior police officer in the country, was killed. And it's not just that women like this are being killed, it's also that nothing is done about it afterwards. So no one's been prosecuted for either of those murders. For women like Mari, who have to carry on working there, obviously that sends out a terrible message that their lives will not necessarily be protected by their government.
You really need protection.
Definitely. Not me, all women activists.
Including you. Yeah, and we want to see you continue to do such wonderful work in Afghanistan. Do you think that violence against women is on the rise in Afghanistan now?
Well, I think it's certainly true that insecurity is growing, which means there are far more areas of the country that are under de facto Taliban control or other similar insurgent groups. So in that sense, yes. I mean, we see not just attacks on these high-profile women in public life. We also see attacks on school teachers, health workers, anyone associated with the government. Schoolgirls have been attacked. There was a well-reported case in a year ago of a couple of schoolgirls walking to school in Kandahar who had acid thrown on their faces. So if you're a woman or a girl living in these areas that are under insurgent control, then clearly violence is on the rise. But actually, also, if you look in the rest of the country, impunity is on the rise as well. And so, you know, it's much easier for women to be attacked because there's so little chance of them getting justice.
But even in places where there is not as much violence, we're still not seeing the numbers of girls going to school, especially secondary school, as I think we would like.
That's right. That's one of the areas we looked at was girls' access to secondary education. And there was quite understandably quite a big focus on primary education in the first few years after the Taliban. And I think what our research showed was that actually now is the time to focus on secondary school education as well, because it's at that age when you can actually help girls to be protected from things like the pressures for child marriage and forced marriage. We see a series of obstacles to teenage girls getting to school. You know, from the outside, sometimes people might think that Afghan families don't want their daughters to be educated. Most of the studies show that that's not necessarily the case. And Mari, I'm sure, will confirm this. But some of the obstacles are more subtle things, like there are less girls' schools than boys' schools. And when you've got teenage girls, there's quite a cultural pressure on them not to be walking long distances to school because people are worried about their girls being abducted or just being seen in public. It's not necessarily they don't want them to be educated. It's just that it's hard for them to get to schools. There aren't enough schools. Similarly, the majority of schools in Afghanistan don't really have proper school buildings yet. So again, particularly when you've got teenage girls, it becomes much harder for them to sit out in the open and be seen. It's some of these more subtle cultural taboos that I think sometimes aren't necessarily recognised by perhaps the international community. Only 4% of girls finish school. So it's a really low number. So despite the gains, I mean, there are now 6 million children in school. Well, I mean, in terms of girls, it was a baseline of zero. So, you know, that's a significant achievement, but it was a baseline of zero from the Taliban age. So, you know, okay.
So 8 years later, we'd hope to be in a better place.
We would hope to be further on than this, I think, yeah. You know, there are. It's going to take a long time because there aren't things like enough women teachers, but I think that so often these kinds of issues for women and girls can be an add-on, you know, and it's not been central to the development effort. The kind of work that needs to be done in Afghanistan is very long-term. It's not going to be done in a year and a half. It can't be done to satisfy the need for, you know, photographs to send back to the domestic audiences to show how successful it's been. It's a complicated, slow business.
Takes a long time. So not 18 months. That's very clear. But what does need to happen? I mean, what are the most important steps, I guess, first that the Afghan government can take?
So many things. I mean, one of the things, we've obviously just got President Karzai re-elected, and so what one of the things we'll be watching for, I think, in the next few weeks is who he appoints to his new government. And here we want really to see many more women in public life, and not just, you know, women from some conservative families that he thinks will be safe, but actually activists, proper activists who are going to defend women's rights. And I'm afraid we may see the former rather than the latter. The way politics works in Afghanistan, it's all about patronage through these quite conservative, often former warlords, networks. And women don't have guns. They don't have, you know, great big poppy fields. So they're not listened to enough, unless there are actually enough women in government to lead the charge. So that's really important. One of the things we mention in the report is that we call for a significant sign to be sent out from the government that they want the police and the judiciary to start changing their attitudes. Because we mentioned this law that's been passed earlier that's very positive. We also need to change the attitudes and raise the awareness of the police and judiciary. More than half the women... Yeah, the rape law, exactly. So the rape law was a positive sign, but it's going to be useless unless the police and the judiciary are taught the law and trained differently to think differently. More than half the women and girls in prison are there for so-called moral crimes. I mean, basically running away from home, which is not a crime in the criminal code. It's not even a crime in Sharia. So running away from home or adultery. Women shouldn't be being locked up for these things. So one of the things we're calling for in the report is that the president release all of these women and girls, give them an apology and preferably compensation, because there's no way they should have ever been arrested for these crimes. One positive note, I was very encouraged after the Sharia law furore because I was really impressed that women came out on the streets, they were galvanised, they came together, they fought an incredibly powerful campaign, and I think they felt the power of the international media unleashed on their side. And what it shows is that although the government of Afghanistan and sometimes the international governments around the world helping might think that they can forget about Afghan women and girls, actually the public around the world and the media around the world will not.
What should the U.S. be doing? Where is the focus? Where should the pressure be at this point when it comes to women's rights and human rights?
Well, first of all, President Obama needs to start mentioning women in his speeches. He needs to send a signal that actually he cares and that this hasn't been forgotten. We hear a lot of talk now in the new Obama and the military strategy. There's lots of talk about the importance of governance and rule of law, which is great in theory, because impunity is one of the things that impacts on women most severely. So that I welcome. I mean, there's never been enough focus for all these last few years on justice and rule of law. You know, sometimes when I, having lived in Afghanistan for a couple of years now, I come out regularly and people often say to me, but, you know, human rights, does it make sense in Afghanistan? Do Afghans want human rights? Isn't this another culture? Shouldn't we leave them? We're going in with funny Western ideas that don't make sense there. And I'm thinking about a young girl that I've met that, and I've talked about with Mari many times, who is a perfect example of how idiotic that idea is. Of course Afghans want their human rights. Of course young women and girls in Afghanistan want to demand their human rights. There was a young girl who was forced into a marriage at around the age of 13 or so, and she was getting a lot of abuse in her family situation. She came from a very conservative area in the southeast of the country, and she did an incredibly brave thing and managed to run away and got herself to Kabul. That in itself, where young women are very rarely seen out on their own, was an extraordinary feat. And she managed to get into a safe house. The family that she'd run away from were furious. They believed that she'd shamed them. And they got a lot of support, including in Parliament. Her case was debated in Parliament, and there was, with vitriol, you know, there was so much anger, and they said that she must go back to the family. She said, no, I'll be killed. I'll be killed because they think I've dishonoured them. Incredible courage. And no one will hear my cries. The president supposedly says to her, I've spoken to the family, you're going to be safe. They assure me you will be safe. She says, if you think I'm going to be so safe, why don't you send your own wife or daughter there? So when you see that incredible courage in a girl so young who comes from such an incredibly conservative place, you think, you know, the idea that human rights, claiming your human rights is some alien concept is ridiculous. That's a universal thing. The desire for freedom is a universal thing. And a young girl like that shows it.
You show so many examples of such a courage, such a talented woman. It is really comes again, I say that it is painful, that there is a lot of courage, there is a lot of commitment among women. Afghanistan was practically women was take the lead and women play as a peacemaker and solve a huge problems at the ethnic groups at the inside the country, even in between the neighbors countries. It was women in Afghanistan, but unfortunately we lost the valuable culture. We had everything, but for rebuilding all this, it is not again not it's 2 years again not 8 years. It's a long way.
That was Maria Krami. She's been studying in the U.S. for the past few months, but she plans to return to Afghanistan to continue her work as a women's rights activist there. A note about Mary, she told me that one of the things she's most proud of is her work educating Afghan men about women's rights and human rights. And I also spoke with Rachel Reed, the author of a new report on women's rights in Afghanistan from Human Rights Watch. It's called We Have the Promises of the World, and you can read it or download it on our website, hrw.org. And that's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, visit hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.